This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I am Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Alice Perryman from Permila, Texas, and you are listening to a special trail riding episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for September 21st, episode 1786, brought to you by Renegade Hoof Boots and NATRC. Good morning, Horse World.
Thursday. I'm so happy it's Thursday.
Just an ordinary day.
If you love to ride horses, but you'd rather ride on a trail than in an arena, I think I know a sport just for you.
We're out. We're getting to the first mark. We're a little ahead of time.
Expect nothing less than full-blown chaos.
Welcome back, Alice. It's the third Thursday of the month, so Alice is here with us. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I am doing very well.
Right now,
in anticipation of Hurricane Irma, as we record this show this morning. So, really great right now, and I'm having a great time watching the sun. Beautiful out right now. How about you? Are you all healed? Last time we spoke, you had boo-boos.
Yes, I went back to the doctor on Wednesday, and he x-rayed it again, and he said that the x-ray looks the same, but that typically the actual healing is ahead of what they see on the x-ray. And so he said, I can keep, you know, lifting 5 to 10 pounds of weight. I can work out. I can ride if I really have to.
But and you really have to.
He wouldn't. If I really have to, but he wouldn't. But he wouldn't, but he doesn't ride, so he doesn't understand.
Yeah.
So if I really have to, I can ride. And so I have ridden 2 times. I rode last weekend, I guess on Monday I rode, or it was Labor Day I rode. And I have a little junior rider that has been coming over. Her name is Kira. I'm going to show this to her so she can hear it, so she knows that I mentioned her. I'm trying to groom her to be my next NATRC junior project.
Woohoo!
She's just a really awesome, intuitive rider. And she's been riding my daughter's horse, Dixie, who amazingly is really happy to have a job. I thought Dixie would be kind of sourpuss about it, but this kid walks out to the pasture with no treats and a halter, and that horse comes right to her.
Oh, that's great.
I know. It's really awesome. They have a beautiful relationship. And so, rode around with her on Monday. I think we did like 5 miles. And then, today I rode with, I have one of our guests coming up is Jan Lear. She's on a trek and she stopped here, and we rode this morning for about a half an hour. She's trying to get her horse convinced that 7 years of rest, that he can come back from that, and he can be ridden again.
Oh, so, that's tough.
Yeah. He's not so sure he agrees, but we rode around and, you know, I was riding Joe Bob and he was pretty lazy. So that worked out well.
Yeah. Good old Joe
Bob. And then we have our fall season starting up with in this region, like this coming weekend in Tennessee, there's a competition called Ride the Edge, which is a really popular one. And I had really planned to go this year, but broken arm, I haven't ridden for over a month.
Probably not the right time to go to a competition called Ride the Edge.
Yeah, I know, but I want to go so bad. I wanted to go last year, and it's so close to where I used to live in Kentucky, and I miss that part of the country. So we're going to, I know, Sarah Rennie, our national administrative, director is heading that way. And then another friend who's been on the show, Kay Gunkel, our vet judge, is heading that way. So it's in region 5, and they say it's just a gorgeous ride. And the weather has just cooled off and the trees are just barely starting to turn. Makes me sad.
Makes you sad. But you've got things going on at home. What's this here about? I hear about a rescue.
Yeah. Well, we had a,
explain yourself.
Okay. Well, so Hermoso, our Pasifino that I parted ways with, he went he went on to a professional trainer because we decided that the issues he had were just more than I could overcome or that Mike could overcome. He was just kind of unpredictable for us. And he's with a really good Pasofino trainer in Houston, and he survived the hurricane quite well. And he'll end up being a fabulous horse for somebody. It just wasn't for us. And the day before he left, somebody, a friend of a friend, said, there's this Pasofino who was rescued from the killer sale in Bowie, or the pens in Bowie, Texas. And this friend of mine in Alabama owns this horse, or bought this horse, and she has discovered that she has some health problems, and she's just not going to be able to make it happen as far as getting him and riding him. And her dog trainer had actually gone to get him. And evidently the lady that owned the horse, her name is Nan, she had not realized that we're not in Bowie's backyard, but you know, it's Texas. It's like, you know, it's Alabama. It's like, no, it's Texas. so the trainer, who's very nice, Brittany Spaniel trainer, went and picked the horse up and had her at his house. And it was just pretty obvious that it wasn't ever going to work out for her to pick him up to go to Alabama. And so we went over and picked her up, and we had to just like put some panels, and she went up in the trailer. It's like, once you can put a hand on her, she's fine, but she's very shy. I have no idea what her story is other than her Coggins papers say Arkansas. And there was phone numbers. So I tried to track down her history, but yeah, the people wouldn't answer the phone. Yeah. So, well, one lady answered, and then they said, oh, that's my brother's horse, but he would never answer. So yeah. I have no idea. Which I was disappointed, because I would love to have learned her history. But she's a really pretty buckskin, and she is, like I said, she's real shy, but once you get a hand on her, she's okay. And we've been doing a little work with her in the round pen. And we've put a saddle and we haven't ridden her, but we've put a blanket and a saddle on her, and she clearly knows what they are. She, you know, we're like doing a bunch of flags and desensitization, and she stands there. But, you know, her choice is not to be caught if given. But she's out in a big pasture. And even out in the big pasture, she lets us walk right out there and catch her if we're slow about it. As long as we don't move too fast, which is hard for me.
this is gonna be a good exercise for you, because it will help you become more aware of what you're physically doing, because she's gonna be so reactive. That's great though. That sounds like an exciting adventure.
Yeah, and it will be. I mean, she's beautiful. She's a good-sized horse. I mean, probably, and I don't know if she's really a Pasofino or not. They say that in the video from the kill pen, she was gating, and she was ridden with a halter and a lead rope bareback. But so far, all I've seen is her trot. Her trot looks lovely. We don't really care. She's sweet. And, oh, and here's the weirdest part of the whole story. Looking at her, I'm looking, going, I wonder what her name is. I wonder what I want to call her. I wonder what they used to call her. And I kept coming up in my head. I kept thinking, Dolly. I need to call her Dolly. And I don't even like the name Dolly. And I have a friend who has a horse named Dolly. Well, the horse trainer, or the dog trainer, came out, and he says, well, here's your Coggins papers. Her name was Dolly.
Oh my gosh.
So I was like, well then, I guess your name is Dolly.
Well, you know, that horse has to be yours forever now. You can never get rid of it. That's it. She's yours forever. So get comfortable.
Well, that's probably true.
So yeah. So, that's very exciting. And, congratulations.
I have a daily Winnie for somebody.
Hit the button.
All right, my daily Winnie is for another Gatesville girl. Her name is Ann Best, and she has done competitive trail and fun trail riding and ridden for AERC. And she went to Houston and brought back 22 of Darylin Butler's horses, who Darylin had Darylin's property is floodplain. And a couple of years ago, we had Justin Nelson on. He had helped Darylin when they flooded. He had helped her rescue some of her horses. Well, she got them all out before the hurricane, so nobody was in any danger. But there's a lack of Houston real estate right now for people to place horses at the moment. There's a lot of horses at the Montgomery County Fairground. But Ann went at first just to get a couple of the older horses. And then she and some other people went down and brought the horses. And they're all being housed close to here in Glen Rose, Texas. And they all had rain rot and they all had to be scrubbed. And their feet had gotten really crumbly and nasty from being in water for too long. And I just, you know, and she is just the kindest, nicest, quietest person. She says she is a card carrying extreme introvert. And she went out of her comfort zone to go bring these horses up here so that they would have a good, steady, permanent place to be until Darlene could take them back. And I just wanted to give her a shout.
Oh, good for her.
So I'm sure there's a ton of other daily whinnies for all of the rescuers, of all of the horses. I mean, like Jonna Johnson is somebody I know that physically helped rescue horses. We have a couple of local guys from my church, Kevin George and Jerry Fellers went down there with their boat to rescue people. More people than, you know, we can name that helped people during the flooding. So to all of those rescuers, I want to give a big shout.
Well, thanks a bunch. And there's going to be more of that coming up in the next few weeks as Irma comes rolling through. So,
yes.
Good on you guys. So I think we had get our first guest on the phone, Ashley.
We got to start the whole, what is it? The whole
shmagaga.
Shmega.
You got to get the shmagaga in there. Yes.
Shmagaga, yes.
Look that up if you don't know what it is. So we're going to have Ashley Wingert from Renegade Hoofboots on, and she's going to give us the shmagaga about Renegade Hoofboots. So why don't we get her, have a chat?
Good morning, Ashley. Welcome to Horses in the Morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's so great to have you today. We are so excited at the North American Trail Ride Conference to have you as one of our sponsors. So let's start off by hearing a little bit about Ashley.
That's a new thing. Sponsoring NATRC for us is a new thing this year. So we're really excited to be on board. You might not know, but I actually personally rode and have ridden NATRC for years as well. So really excited to be on board again with an organization that I've been a part of.
Wow, that's great. What kind of horse did you ride and where was it? Where did you do your first ride?
So I've been in Arizona, and I actually started out my distance career with a, she is now my retired competition horse, but she is a Pony of Americas, and she and I used to do shows together, and then we discovered trail riding and competitive distance riding, and that was kind of that. I don't think we did another show after we did our first distance rides.
How cool.
So you was in the desert, like in Arizona? I mean, like region 2, I'm thinking, or?
Yes, we're region 2, so Arizona, and then traveled over to Southern California a lot to do rides there.
Okay. Yeah. That's someplace I've always wanted to go, and I know they have a ride in the middle of January, and the last 2 years, I kept thinking, I'm going to go, and then, you know, life got in the way, and then it'd be like, oh, that was this weekend. Oops. I guess I'm not going.
It's a great area. That ride in January is actually my home training grounds where I ride all the time, so it's definitely worth a trip out.
Well, tell me what it's like, because that's been part of my hesitation is just I've never ridden in the desert before, and I'm a little nervous about snakes and deserty things. So,
well, in the winter, you won't have to worry about the snakes. They're true. Only out like right now this time of year. So avoid coming here anywhere from about, you know, May to October, and you'll be good. But in the winter like that, you don't have to worry about the snakes. You'll have sand. You have rocks. Makes for hoof protection is pretty much a absolute must here in the desert. That's one of the things
really?
That really even got me going on hoof boots is just where we're at is it's really sandy. So if you're barefoot, you can really wear the horse's feet down really fast, faster than what their growth can keep up with. If you're doing any kind of distance riding, training for that. And then where it's not sandy, it does tend to be pretty rocky. So in order to be able to make time, keep their feet protected so you don't have to slow down for every single rock, that's been a part of the popularity of hoof boots here in the whole Southwest area.
Well, and I know one of the great things about Renegade boots is that they are made in the United States, which is not the case for some of the other hoof boots. So let's start with that. How did Renegade come to be, and you know, how did it develop to be made in the United States? I think that's really awesome.
It was originally developed way back in 2001. Was when I very first started coming up with a prototype boot. Kurt Lander, the inventor of the boot and the owner of the company, is a certified barefoot hoof trimmer. He and his wife, Gina, were doing competitive distance riding with their horses. And just there was a real lack of a good performance boot that would hold up to the demands of distance riding on the market. Kurt's also an engineer by trade, so he took some of his engineering skills combined with his knowledge of barefoot hooves, barefoot performance horses, and developed this boot that is really designed to hold up to what the demands of distance riding and other very more aggressive type of performance sports will put on a boot or anything that you're going to put on their hoof. Talking about a lot of torque, a lot of force, outside like terrain, mud, rocks, all of that's going to affect the boot. So they have to really be able to stand up to that. And the biggest problem that Kurt saw was there wasn't a boot out there that allowed the hoof to really move the way it needed to without interfering, as well as be able to go with that terrain.
Okay, that makes sense. Because I know that some of the other boots, while they're okay for recreational riding, they're not either not rated or they're just not sturdy enough to hold up to miles and miles of riding, and or they're
correct.
Too bulky.
Correct. Yeah.
I have a horse that's he's worn shoes maybe 12 weeks out of 10 years of his entire riding career, because he has such good feet. But occasionally I need boots, and I've had a really hard time finding ones that aren't too bulky, that don't interfere with his natural way of going. And the only thing that's held me back from Renegades is mainly just that I haven't had anyone to help me fit them. I haven't known who to go to. Mm-hmm. So I know that that's really important. And how do people find fitters?
Mm-hmm. So the main thing we do tell people that they may not work for every single horse out there. We make no promises or guarantees that they'll work for every single horse out there. There's a reason that the boot market is the way it is. There's a lot of options just because there's not any one particular boot out there that'll work for every single horse. That being said, when it comes to fitting, starting with a good barefoot trim is really a critical part of the fit and function of these boots. But because of how they're designed to fit, they don't have to be this perfect, snug, you know, no wiggle room whatsoever type of fit. And that's actually the biggest mistake that we see people make, is they fit them too tightly. And when that happens, it doesn't allow that hoof to expand within the boot shell, because you're talking, it is a little more rigid of a material, pretty sturdy sole plate on there. What you want is actual wiggle room to allow that hoof to expand within the boot shell when the horse is moving. So if it's too tight on there, it doesn't have that kind of little bit of wiggle room, the forces that the hoof is actually exerting on the boot will cause it to twist or actually come off. So that's the basic principle of what you're looking for on a good fit. And because of that, our most common recommendation for fitting is we have people take photos of the hooves on a fresh trim with a tape measure showing the width and the length measurement and email them in to us. Because we do have a small network of distributors and dealers across the states as well as internationally, but they tend to be hoof trimmers and farriers, so they work in a fairly small service area. So it's not critical to have an in-person fitting to be able to get the correct size. We fit probably 90% of our business is done just based on people sending photographs in. And all of us that will work with you on sizing are trained in terms of barefoot trimming. So it's not just looking at a hoof and the measurement and going, oh, this is what you need. We're actually evaluating the whole hoof. If there's something in the trim that we see that's going to prevent a good fit or a good function of the boot, we'll note that and say, okay, here's what we're seeing. It's not addressed. You're really going to have some problems with the boot performance. Something like if there's some flare on the sidewall, higher heels, a really long toe, all of those things are going to prevent a good boot performance. So we'll work with customers on the trimming of the hoof, the sizing. We will recommend, if you send photos in, a size and boot style. And then once you get the boots, we'll work with you in terms of any adjustments. We have educational videos online that do detail out all of the basics of installing the boots, and then more detailed in terms of if you need to go in and adjust the cables, dial in the fit. We have all of that in both written instructions as well as video instructions.
Okay. And I know that there are several different models of Renegade. So I know there's like, I've looked online and I see there's a Renegade and there's a Renegade Viper. And I look at those and I'm going, I don't know what to order. I don't have a clue. So how would I know which boot is the right one?
So the Classic and the Viper both operate on the same principle of the pivoting heel captivator. So when it comes to the performance aspect of moving with the hoof, allowing horses natural movement, they're both going to be the same on that sense. The biggest difference is going to be in the shape of the boot itself. They do use two different size charts to correlate to each style. The Classic is what we started with, and if you look at the shape of it, it's going to be a little bit wider towards the back of the heels, just a little bit narrower at the toe. If you have a fairly oval-shaped hoof, something that's a little bit longer and narrower, or maybe a hoof that is wider back at the heels, where if you look at it, it's a little bit more of a spade shape, that's going to fit really well in the Classic. It's just a little more accommodating for the type
of
shape
that
will fit.
A rounder foot. Is that what you're saying?
Actually, the rounder foot would end up being fit into the Viper.
Okay.
On the Viper, if you look at a picture of that one, that's going to be broader at the toe and then broad towards the middle of the hoof, and then just a little bit tighter in towards the heel. So you have a very symmetrical, like perfectly round, or just slightly oval hoof, then the Viper will generally tend to fit that shape a little bit better. That's, again, one of those things that we really encourage people to send the photos in.
Oh, sure.
And we can just take a look and say, oh, this style is going to be better, or, you know, you could really go with either one, personal preference.
Okay. And then you guys still have glue-on boots. Do people use those a lot anymore?
Yes.
Or, I mean, like I know with...
Say
with NATRC, we used to not be able to use any boots that came up over the heel bulb or onto the fetlock, but that rule was overturned several years ago. So we don't have to use gluons anymore. And most everyone I know has gone to boots that have the, you know, the better capture system. But what are, you know, but with the gluon boots, I'm sure there's advantages to those as well.
There are, and they are still, they're not as common as the strap styles, just because they have a little more specific purpose. They were developed and to really be used for short-term single competition type of use. What we see the most common use for them is multi-day endurance rides, multi-day competitive trail rides, where people don't want to be putting boots on and taking them off every single day, you know, 3, 4, 5 days in a row, or for 100-mile endurance rides. They're a little bit lighter weight, a little more streamlined over the course of 100 miles. That all of that really can add up. And it's just when you're talking that kind of distance. I know personally, I'm actually heading for it'll be my first 100 miler next weekend. And I'm going to be using the gluons just because it's just one less thing to be thinking about. If you do the preparation of the hoof right, follow the application steps, those gluons are very secure. They're staying on. It's just going to be one less thing that I'm going to have in the back of my mind wondering about. So a little bit of peace of mind.
So like the gluons would be more like before I used boots, I didn't like to shoe. So I would like have my farrier put on a set of shoes and then pull them as soon as the ride was over. So someone who would have done that would have been like a gluon situation, perhaps. Like someone who's not going to use hoof protection all the time, they just need them very occasionally.
Exactly. Yes. Okay. That'd be a good use for the gluons. Another use people will, talk to customers about is like pack trips or camping type of backcountry camping trips where the horses are really great barefoot the rest of the year, but where they're going is going to be really rocky and they just want something that they can leave on them for a week or so. And that would be a good use for the gluons.
All right. Perfect. And I want to get back because I got off on a tangent and I apologize. You had said something before we were talking about the, how the boots are made in the United States. And I wanted to hear like where they're made and how that decision was reached, which obviously is awesome that they're made over here.
So we're the main factory is based out of Kingman, Arizona. So it's the very northwest part of the state. And that was that decision was on the part of Kurt and Gina Lander, the company owners, that it's really important for them to have a U.S. made and produced product. They have a lot of pride in the country. And they just feel personally that it's a really important thing to be able to keep our manufacturing here within the country, supporting small business, local economy. Kingman is a pretty small town, so being able to have a manufacturing company there, it is definitely contributing to the town economy, providing jobs. And it just gives us a lot of direct control over our quality control. We do everything ourselves in factory, from the designing and building of the boot molds to pouring the molds to final boot assembly is all done on site right there. So if we have a problem, if we're noticing that there might be something, going on with a batch of material, we are able to address it and correct a problem very quickly and really stay on top of that quality control.
Wow, that's awesome. And where can people find your boots? what number can they call, or what is the website?
So our main website is www.renegadehoofboots.com. That will have all of our information on there, or you can give us a call. Our factory line is 888-817-4794.
Well, thank you so much. We are so excited to have you as a part of the NATRC family. We really look forward to the partnership and seeing lots of riders wearing your all's boots.
Yes, we are too. I've been a sponsor for one of the rides up in Kingman for the last couple of years, just directly working with the ride manager. So it's really exciting for us to be able to expand to that national level.
Well, thank you so much for taking time to come on the show, and I wish you the best of luck with your 100. That sounds very exciting. I've only recently decided that maybe I want to ride farther than NATRC distances, but I haven't quite put that into place yet. So
it's a blast. Love hearing I am so hooked on any kind of distance riding. I just think they're both NATRC is a great organization. I am really glad I got my start in distance riding with it, because it just lays such a solid foundation of horsemanship on both the rider as well as the horse. So it is one of those I really recommend people, if they're starting out in distance riding, curious about it, it's one of those areas I'd tell them, look up NATRC, look up distance, competitive distance riding. It's going to be a great start, great foundation.
Well, we're going to have you back on when you finish your first 100 and hear all about it, okay?
Absolutely.
Oh, that would be awesome. I would love to. But fingers crossed, it'll be, I'm borrowing a friend's horse to do it. It'll be the horse's first 100 and my first 100.
Well, best of luck, and we want to hear about it when you finish and have a great time.
Excellent. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Well, gosh, things are going fast and furious here. We've got our next guest on the line and ready to go, Alice.
Good morning, Shannon. Welcome to Horses in the Morning.
Thanks for having me again.
So let's give a little background about who you are and what you do. How did we first meet? What is your organization?
Okay, yeah, absolutely. So I run horse trails and camping across America. Most people know it with HTCAA. And we got started on Facebook about 5 years ago, and we are now the number one trail riding resource on the internet, all by accident. And it's just led on to a whole bunch of different things. We have rides all over the country, and we have people that are constantly on Facebook all the time. We've got about 50,000 active members on there every month, so we are one of the top active Facebook groups on Facebook, so that's kind of a cool thing too. And then we just recently started our new online trail riding magazine called The Trail Journal.
And so people can find The Trail Journal where?
They can also find that on Facebook, or they can find it at trailjournal.org. And if you go to htcaa.org, everything is there too.
And so, briefly, how did you decide to write a trail journal?
That was all just by accident, but it's been a very cool thing. So as many of us know, we've just continually been losing a lot of our trail magazine resources out there. And when we lost one of our biggest ones earlier this spring, a lot of the members just came together and they were saying, it was just a bummer that we've lost that resource, and just a lot of conversations sparked off of that. So the next thing I know, I was asking them if they'd be interested in having one starting up through HTCAA and having it member driven. So it creates a lot of work that way, but yet it's very cool because every month, our goal is to have different stories from different locations and different people all around the country, and just getting to hear all those different experiences. So we just launched our September issue. That was our third issue, and it just keeps getting more and more popular. It's a lot of fun.
Well, and I have a guest that's going to be on a little later named Jan Lear, who is taking a big trek, and she's somebody who should do some writing for you guys. I should hook the two of you up because she has a group on Facebook and where she's writing about her adventure, but she loves to write, and I'm sure it would be good for, you know, good for people reading too.
Absolutely.
So when you were on before, we got into a little bit about the numbers of trail riders there are. And with the Trail Journal and Horse Trails and Camping Across America, you've proven that there are just bazillions and gazillions of trail riders. And you have some actual hard numbers for us to show how much the trail riders drive the equine industry, maybe we've been the most much forgotten and maligned of the equine sports. Mm-hmm. So I wanted you to touch on that a little bit today.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that's the one thing. I know that in the past, you know, even when I've done research on trail riders, it's very hard to come across, which is crazy to me because they say that 85% of horse owners in the country are trail riders, or considered recreational riders. So it's kind of frustrating when you get out into the statistics and it's very hard to find numbers that are associated with that, even though we represent the largest amount of horse owners out there. I've done a little bit of research just on different things, just to kind of give an idea of what the trail rider impacts, how many of us are out there, and that sort of deal. So some of the things I came across, again, I think it's just amazing that 85% of horse owners across the country are recreational riders, as they call them.
And that doesn't mean that the person's not doing other things too.
Correct.
But at least 85% of the people polled at least trail roads sometimes for fun.
Yep.
Is that correct?
Exactly. Yep,
okay.
Exactly. So, and I think that's also on a trend, you know, and it's hard to find these statistics, which is frustrating, but I've definitely heard it enough across the board that it's definitely a new trend within the showing world to get your horses out on the trail more because they're finding that it's just making a happier horse. You know, go figure, getting him out of the stall and out of an arena is, you know, it's helpful for the rider and the horse as well. So I know that there's a growth in that too, but again, it's hard to find those statistics. It's just the things that you hear kind of, you know, through the ropes. But that's definitely a big thing that we're seeing more people that show and are involved in that kind of stuff are getting out on the trails.
Okay. And then so of the recreational riders, or then you have 85% recreational riders, and then you also have a statistic for competitive riders. And I'm guessing in this case, you mean mm-hmm. like competitive trail riders or endurance riders or like competitive mountain orienteering, like some sort of a trail sport that
yep.
is also competitive. Is that correct?
Yeah. So on here, I believe that they're just wrapping all of that in together. So anything
okay.
that, you know, includes your riding for some sort of an award.
Okay.
So
showing and everything. Okay, so not just like Okay, wow. So
yeah.
85% of riders are recreational riders, but only mm-hmm. 30% of all riders are competitive riders.
Competitive.
That is
yeah.
a tiny number compared to your recreational riders. I mean,
it really is. Yeah.
I mean, that's not even half of all the riders.
Mm-hmm.
Half of all the recreational.
No.
I mean, that's like a little less than a third.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and that's why I think it's frustrating to not find more specific statistics. And if there's any listeners out there that know where you can find this stuff, it'd be great. You know, because obviously we're affecting, right here it says the GDP effect by activity. Racing is 10.6 billion, showing is 10.8 billion, but recreation is 11.8 billion. So it tops out on the top.
Right.
You know, we're having a huge effect within the economy, but again, it's hard to find those statistics specifically about what goes on in the trail riding world. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. What's interesting about this is, as I'm looking at it, if recreational riders account for 11.8 billion, that's a billion more than all the people who compete. Is that, or mm-hmm. are we talking showing in this case
yep.
is showing everything you compete for an award or is showing mean ring sports? I mean, it would be nice to know. How that
yeah,
works
they
down.
Don't specify there. And again, it's hard to find The Trudown system, this one broke it down as much as I've seen anybody else. Because usually they just say racing, showing. They actually don't even include recreation on many of them, which I think is crazy because that tops the numbers.
Well, because if you were to compare the percentage of riders to the percentage of the dollars, it would appear that the 30% are spending, I mean, if you look at the competitive people are spending way more money as a group than the recreational riders, but the recreational riders are a bigger group. So that's why we still spend more money.
Yep.
Does that make sense? Absolutely. Did I say that right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Yes, absolutely. You said that right. So, even I understood that.
Okay.
But that's an interesting point. It's fewer dollars per capita, but by sheer volume of consumers or potential consumers or volume within that demographic, the recreational rider is huge. And I'm curious because, Shannon, you are really very much inside the recreational rider industry, and I'm going to go ahead and call it that industry. Culturally, you've got your finger on the pulse, if I can use a really bad euphemism. Why do you think that the equestrian industry within the United States, we can't speak to how it works outside of the United States because none of us are that familiar, although future guest, why do you think that it has become the silent majority? What's your feel for it?
I think for one, you just don't have the marketing behind it. You know, when you open up most magazines, especially the you know, equine related magazines, it's very much, you know, focused on the competitive world. And I think that is because it's easier to, you know, promote your products to a competitive world because you're going to be far more concerned about, you know, the performance and the health. And even though trail riders are too, but, you know, these guys are performing at top levels, you know, depending on the type of competition.
Well, and like the tack expense. The tack expense. I noticed, I remember hanging out with some serious dressage riders and they were looking at bridles and they were like, well, I could get this $80 bridle and it feels okay, but this $800 bridle feels so much better. And I'm like, okay, I spent $200 on my entire Biothane tack set. Not quite 200. You know, each horse has their own and they cost me between $150 and $200 each. I don't have $800 in all of my bridles and stuff.
Yeah. You don't shop.
Exactly. And right. There you go.
I don't shop unless I need something.
I'm the same way. I am with you on that, sister. So, but I definitely think that's the big thing, you know, showing, I mean, your clothing is a huge expense. Your everything. I mean, just everything is just at a higher level.
I think
so. It's easier to market to that.
Yeah. I think another aspect of that, I think you kind of hit the global issue is it's easy to market to the competitive demographic. When you're trying, when you market to your chosen demographic, one of the things you use is something called influencers. You get influencers to promote your product. For example, you produce a cross-country saddle. So you find influencers within persons who use cross-country saddles, eventers, to promote your product. So you hire a Boyd Martin or a Philip Dutton or a Lauren Kiefer to ride in your saddles and be one of your ambassadors. That's using an influencer for marketing purposes. It's very, very hard to find influencers within the recreational trail community. I don't think it's impossible, but I think it's much harder. And I think that's one of the stumbling blocks that people have.
The first person I thought of when you talked about influencers in the trail community is our own Karen Chatton. And I mean, she's an endurance rider,
and she's an
but she's an influencer, but she also influences from the inside out. And of course, you know, I would like to think I'm an influencer, but I probably am.
By hosting this show, you are very much an influencer.
But I mean, I think about the quote unquote famous people like the Potato Richardsons and the people who are out there doing Tevis, but really they're not, they're not recreational.
They're competitive.
So Shannon, Shannon is probably our biggest influencer.
She is, absolutely.
There you go.
Well, you know, and that's the catch too, though, because I'm an influencer on the outside, but when it comes to trail riding, Comparatively to most of my members, we do very little, mostly because just, you know, work time and money get in the way. So that's another thing too. I've actually had people come to me and say, hey, would you promote this? And I said, unfortunately, I don't do enough riding out on the trails that I can do that. So yeah, influencer in some ways, but out on the trail, unfortunately, I just don't get enough time out there. I'm praying someday this changes. But
if anybody wants to have me to have a product to try, I spend lots of hours in the saddle. I'll be happy to try it.
Absolutely.
Just throwing that out there.
But I do think that's a big thing. And again, some of the things that I found interesting too on this, when I was researching some of it, the American Recreation Coalition, they did an outdoor recreation outlook in 2017. And it was a pretty large document, but I came through and they did actually do, which is so nice to see, they actually had some interesting stuff on the horseback riding. And they said recreational horseback riding is the largest segment of the horse industry, both in numbers of horses and economic impact. More than 1,000 different rides are available across America's public lands. I'm not quite sure what they're referring to there as far as rides. I don't know if they're talking.
It could be public. It could be like AERC and ATRC, all the different little.
Yeah.
It could be even just the people who organize.
They could be referring
like
to trailheads that are designed for horse use, too.
Be.
Yeah. They might be thinking of places.
1,000 seems low to me, though, for that. But it could be. So I'm not quite sure what that's going towards. But they said, according to the American Horse Council, roughly 3.9 million horses are used for recreational riding. This segment of the horse industry alone contributes to $32 billion a year to the national economy. Recreational riding is directly responsible for 128,000 jobs and supports nearly 430,000 jobs in the U.S. So that's just the recreational.
That's astounding.
But what I find, it is. I mean, that's, again, it's huge. And that's what's frustrating in not finding more statistics to break some of that down. Mm-hmm. But what I find interesting that goes into what we were talking about marketing is you come down to camping in that same document, and they talk about how many different resources in the camping world are stepping up and reaching out to more people to get involved in recreation. And I think that's, you know, again, something that we kind of need to get a hold of as trail riders. And I think I'm somewhat seeing that, and I'm hoping I'll see that trend within HTCAA, only because right now we've got, you know, 50,000 active members a month, and that's just people that are on Facebook, you know, so we know that there's plenty of other people out there that just aren't, you know, doing that. So I'm showing a small, comparatively to how many are out there, I'm showing a small but solid number of trail riders. So when we're talking about influencers, I'm kind of hoping these 50,000 members can be those influencers out there, that we can start getting more statistics, more numbers, more answers to these things, and finding out how we can market it. You know, so we can get it known out there of all the great campgrounds. And that's been a really, through HDCA, that's been one of my most favorite testimonies of hearing campgrounds out there that are fantastic, but they had a really hard time marketing to people across the country. You know, so maybe, well, in fact, we have an example down in New Mexico. There's just a fantastic ranch down there. And he, but a lot of his customers come from across the country. So for him to advertise across the country has been extremely difficult. So they were really low in numbers about 2 years ago. And that's when him and I started to get to know each other. So he asked, you know, can I just go ahead and advertise on HTCA? And I said, absolutely. Any campground can come on Facebook and use it as much as they want. So he started to do that. And within 1 year, he was totally booked through 2017, a year ahead of time. And it was through HTCA. Yeah. So that kind of stuff excites me.
Whole Canyon Ranch has been one of those too. Like we, people that were kind of local, like people from Northwest Texas, like Wichita Falls and South Oklahoma would go, but it was still kind of a diamond, you know, it was kind of a hidden jewel. And now like we have an NATRC ride every there. This year they're doing their first AERC ride. People from, it used to be people would be like, oh, that's 5 hours away, I don't want to drive there. But then people saw how awesome it was. And they started going. I mean, they've got a little house. They've got 10 or 20 wow. hookups. You know, you can yeah. camp primitive. They got lots of pens. I mean, it's one of those that word of mouth just really spread it. And it's yeah. one of my favorite places to go. I don't get yep. out there
and
often
see, that's
enough.
The kind of stuff that's neat, you know, to be able to market those places out there.
Sure.
Because there isn't a national voice. You know, we've had the magazines out there, but, you know, to be honest, I mean, I was blown away when I started looking at prices to advertise in a magazine. It's yeah, insane.
It's insanity. And most, local small businesses cannot afford that. No,
they can't. So that's been something, again, that I've truly enjoyed seeing through HTCA, that these, you know, campground owners can come out and they're starting to get found. And just like you said, Alice, it is neat. Another testimony on the member side that I truly love is I can't believe how many people I've heard, you know, oh man, I used to never want to travel more than 2 hours from my house. I was too afraid. I'm single. I'm alone. I'm whatever. And then after they started seeing other people that travel cross country or whatever, now we're starting to see, particularly single women, which I'm just loving, that they're just getting the confidence to get out there and do it mm-hmm. because they have people that are able to guide them and tell them what to do along the way. You know, so again, it's that influence, as we were talking about, of people within the group. And so that is my hope with HTCA, that we can really start honing in on that and getting a better grip on what's going on within the trail riding world and how we can just better help people make more of those contacts across the country or across state lines or just in another county, where we can find the better tack and things like that that are specifically detailed for the trail rider. It's out there, but I think we're going to have to do our own research instead of depending on anybody else, because you just can't find it anywhere.
Well, I think
right.
I think you're.
I agree.
You're on the right track, though, Shannon, because for the recreational trail riding community, things are going to happen from the grassroots up,
mm-hmm.
and you're already. Your grass is already pretty tall in your grassroots efforts because of your Facebook page and your new online magazine. So you've already got a start on it. You're way ahead of everybody else. But for people who want to become more involved, start to participate, and really grow the demographic, it's already the largest, but make it even larger so that we can get those statistics, because the more vocal we are, the more statistics we'll get. We've been sitting around being quiet, just doing our own thing for too long. How can they help participate in that? Where can they go online? How can they contact HTCAA, et cetera?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, pretty much where they're going to find all of the socializing of the group is going to be on Facebook. And you can just search under HTCAA, which is Horse Trails and Camping Across America. But as soon as you type in HTCA, usually you're going to have it pop up. We pop up pretty quick nowadays. So not hard to find us on Facebook. And then they can also go to htcaa.org, and they can find everything on there. Again, that our website is still in the infantile stages, so it's a little bit, you know, still in the works. We've got a lot of things coming, hopefully some really good changes this fall. But they can find out stuff on there. But right now, you know, if they want to be able to chat and have fun, definitely go to Facebook, and they're going to find everything they need right there.
And where can they find your Trail Journal magazine?
They can find that in both places as well. So when you type in HTCA on Facebook, you'll also see the Trail Journal will pop up underneath that. And if they go to the website, the Trail Journal is right there on the homepage.
I was looking at the Trail Journal. It is interesting and beautiful, so I recommend it highly. And thank you so much, Shannon Schruffnagel, for coming on the show again today and chatting a little bit about how the recreational trail rider is a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Shannon is such a wealth of information. She knows so much about recreational trail riding culture and who we are and what we do. And just love having her on. And our next guest, also very fun to have on, so much so that we've had her on a second time. This is her second trip to the NATRC show. Take it away, Alice.
Good morning, Jan. Welcome to Horses in the Morning.
It's good to be here.
Right. To refresh everybody's memory, Jan came on the show last year sometime when she was working on her conversion horse trailer, and she finally got it finished, and now it is on the road. So
I'm sitting in it right now.
So tell us about your horse trailer, what it is and what you did to it, just, you know, to get started.
I bought a 1994 empty three-horse, four-star trailer, slant load, and decided I had sold my big trailer for a lot of different reasons, but I wanted a project. And a project is exactly what I got. It took me 3 years to finish it on and off because life got in the way. But it's done now. I've been living in it since August 3rd. It's got knotty pine, tongue and groove cabinets, kind of mahogany colored walls. It's not, it's a dry camper. It does not have plumbing in it or propane, but I can get around that by plugging into electricity somewhere and using one of those spray showers. I don't have a cowboy shower set up in it, but it's quite cozy for one person, and I'm actually enjoying it. I sold my house, sold everything practically in it, and what I didn't sell, I put in storage, so I'm obviously living in and out of my horse trailer.
Yeah, and she told me, she doesn't really live in her trailer, she more lives out of her trailer.
Exactly. I'm outside more now than I was when I had a home.
There you go. And that's actually a good thing, yeah. Right?
Ma'am?
That's probably a good thing.
I'm sorry. I didn't think. It is a good thing. Because if I don't like where I'm at, I can leave. I'm actually quite happy where I am right now.
She's in my yard right now.
Yes, I am. I got here 2 days ago.
And for, normally, the show is in the morning, but we are pre-recording this particular interview because Jan was here and it was just fortuitous. So we've, her horse is here. Her dog is here. She has two cats here. And I asked her when she was going to go and she said she'd stay till I kicked her out. So.
Yeah, pretty much. I spent my first month at a place in Waller, Texas, where two of my horses stayed because it just seemed better to travel with one than two. So I'll be coming back to Texas after my trek is what I'm calling this, which is actually an adventure that could be difficult. And the first 2.5 weeks, I had no air conditioning at the hottest part of summer in Texas. Got that fixed, had to replace the air conditioner. And then I had to live in my trailer during Hurricane Harvey.
Ooh,
and it was
that
quite
sounds
interesting.
Tough.
The wind was, it was. But, I mean, I was comfortable and dry, and I know that my trailer does not leak, and it will not blow over. I think I spent a good 36 hours in it, only going outside when I absolutely had to make sure the horses were okay. But this is an interesting life. It's a simple life, living out of your horse trailer, but it's not easy, because there are things that, like, I don't have the refrigerator, so I have to go buy ice. And I don't have plumbing, so I have to take care of things other ways. But I'm not missing the house at all.
Yeah, see, she's doing something. She's my test subject because I want to do what Mike and I want to do what she's doing right now. It sounds like a blast.
Well, this started, the seed was planted many years ago. I've always loved horses. I didn't get my first horse till I was 45, and I thought I knew everything, and I didn't know anything because I started doing competitive trail ride, and they actually taught me how to ride and how to care for horses and how to camp with horses. So I have Natrek to credit for that. And I lost my train of thought. But anyway.
You caught your seed. So you got your seed a few years ago when you started with NATRC.
Yes, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
And then life got in the way. I ended up with one horse, bought another one, bred them, got two babies, and did quite a few competition rides in the 90s. But then life got in the way. My family members moved in, got sick. I had to take care of them. So riding got put on hold for about 7 years. And I just now in the last month started riding again on a horse that's 22 thinking he's 5, and Alex,
he's pretty feisty.
Confirm that.
He's pretty feisty right now. So
he is.
Well,
go ahead.
I was going to have you tell us about where you plan to go from here.
Okay, I'm going to make two more stops in Texas because I only plan on driving about 250 miles. It's about 4 hours, and that's about all I can handle. My other end gets sore. I'm going to go up into Colorado and then I'm going to cross over into Idaho. And my plan was to go to Oregon, but they're saying that the air quality out there isn't that great. So I'm going to drop down into Northern California, into Nevada, Southern California, Arizona, New Mexico, and make my way back to Texas to see if my other horses are willing to change and come along or what. And I figure this will take me about 2.5 months.
So that's a lot of driving for 2.5 months. I think I want to take more like 4 months or 5 months or.
Well, I don't have to be anywhere for any particular time. I have no schedule really. I figure it's going to be about 6,000 miles driving by the time I get through. And if it goes 3 months, that's fine. If I get bored with it and say, oh, I don't know if I can do this anymore, I can quit early, or I can go buy a bigger trailer and just say, I'm on the road for the long haul.
Yeah, she is actively shopping for a bigger trailer. So she might trade in her trailer.
Bigger living quarters. Bigger living quarters. I need more space. And but
Jennifer, you want a starting living quarters trailer? We'll send her your way.
Now,
well, I can get a bigger one, but I can have someone come with me. You know,
are your bigger digs going to be ready to live in, or are you going to start over again with another project?
No. I am not going to start over in another project. This was one for a lifetime.
That was pretty emphatic, yeah.
I had no clue what was involved other than I knew you had to put insulation in, you had to put furring strips, you had to do wiring, you get that checked out so you're legal. Angles were a problem, so I had somebody frame cabinets and things like that for me, and I put the walls up and everything, and it was a hit or miss. I'd get into a project or a section of it, not know where to go, sit in here and stare at it, look at it, draw it on paper, come back out, and like in 2 hours or something, I'd have the problem solved. The last two cabinets that I made took me all of a weekend. I don't know where the energy came from. I think I knew I was getting close on filling my house and closing on it, so it had to get done. And the house sold on, 10 days after we listed it. We closed on it on the 1st of August. And I moved out on the 3rd. So that was my timeline. And I had it done. I had it ready to live in.
And there you go.
I like it.
Well, thank you for starting your journey with us. And I look forward to checking back with you over the next few months and seeing where you are and what adventures you've had. A couple months ago, we had a couple on that have been adventuring. And their biggest adventure had to do with septic systems, which you won't have to worry about. Or black water tanks and toilets.
Right. If anyone wants to follow me, I have a Facebook page. It's called Horse Living Simplified. And it actually started out for people wanting to downsize and simplify their living with horses as they got older. It's more retirement oriented. But if any of your listeners want to follow me, I'm calling it The Trek. And there is a couple questions in there, but if they answer one of the questions that says, what is your interest in this group? Just say, I heard about you on Horses in the Morning. So I'll let them in. It's a closed group, but I'll let them in and they can follow me. And I'm not going to list every traffic stop I make and every place I eat at. I'm trying to keep this real and they can read what I've written already and go from there. I want to keep it upbeat.
So, and tomorrow we're taking her to the trails at Lake Waco with another local friend. And then Sunday night into Monday, we're either going to go to Seabar where I did my competition or down to Perry Haynes and do a little overnight or a day of riding. So I'm going to show her some of the local sites.
There we go. Well, I at least personally am looking forward to your adventures in your little rig and getting pictures and updates on your adventures. So thanks for coming on, Jan, mm-hmm. and hanging out with us for a few minutes. And keep Alice in line. Make sure she checks her girth she's on the ground, not while she's on the horse.
It was my bridle. Okay. It wasn't my girth.
And make sure she she connects the throat latch properly.
I did. We rode this morning, and I put on the bridle, and I was like, oh, yeah, let's clip these real quick.
Yeah. So, yeah. There we go. No problem. Thanks a lot, Jan.
All right, Jan. It was nice talking to you both. Thanks.
And it's so much fun to chat with Jan. I'm glad she stopped by. And like I said, I'm so looking forward to her further adventures. And speaking of adventures, the NATRC calendar is hot and heavy and full of competitions. What's coming up?
Absolutely. Well, this weekend there are two. The previously mentioned Ride the Edge at East Fork Stables in Tennessee and the Colorado Trail Ride at Buffalo Creek in Colorado. And then two weeks after that, we have one in Farmington, New Mexico, and also at in California and in Nebraska. And so then you get to where there's multiple rides each week. I know that my next ride is going to be at Robbers Route, which is at Robbers Cave State Park in Wilburton. And
what state is Wilburton in?
Oklahoma.
Thank you.
Wilburton, Oklahoma. Yes. Wilburton, Oklahoma. And there is actually a cave there where Jesse James and his gang hid out.
Oh, wow.
And you can hike to it. I've never been to it. Supposedly I've ridden by it, but I was probably watching the trail.
Well, see, if it was an obvious cave, they wouldn't have hidden in it. See?
Well, there you go.
There you go.
But that ride is fabulous. And anybody, open invitation, if anybody wants to make the Robbers Cave ride their very first ride, I will be there and I will personally be happy to mentor them in any way, shape, or form I can.
Yay!
So, yeah.
Cool.
Because it's a beautiful, beautiful ride. And it's for whatever reason, it's traditionally been, it has had low attendance and the weather is always gorgeous and we have good facilities and there's bathrooms and showers and there's electric. I mean, it's awesome. There's everybody.
Awesome.
We should be.
Everybody should enter.
Park.
Now, do they have different divisions for people who maybe this is going to be their first ride?
Yes, we have a 1 day ride, which they call those B rides. So like if somebody goes to enter, they will find a B ride. And I can also, if somebody wants to contact me through Facebook, I will be happy to help them get entered because sometimes our entering system is a little tricky. But we have the novice division and there's a 2 day and a 1 day ride. The 2 day rides are called A rides and the 1 day ride is called B ride. And there is this competitive pleasure or CP division. And that is usually the people who don't want to ride open or who have already noviced out. You know, it's the same speed and pace, or like if your child is starting and you're already experienced.
Yeah.
It's like an open middle division.
Yeah, it's like an open novice kind of a thing. It's not harder to do, but it's open to people with more experience.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then we have our open division, and that's always 2 days also. And those people go a little further and a little faster.
There we go.
So it'll be blast.
You can find it all on NATRC.org. And what is your Facebook page, Alice?
My Facebook page is, my name is Alice Perryman, but I think my Facebook page is under Ayovich, A-Y-O-V-I-C-H.
Or if you can't remember any of that, just drop an email to Jennifer at Horse Radio Network and we'll make sure that gets it.
And they can find me on Messenger as Alice Perryman. I don't think there's another one.
There we go. So all of those, let's everybody inundate Alice. So when she goes to this competition, she's really
awesome.
Embarrassed because so many people who listen to the show show up. I think that'd be a good
idea. That would be so great. That would be so great. And show everyone that people really are listening and they're really out there. It'd be great.
There we go. Well, thanks for stopping by on the third Thursday of the month, Alice. To find links to today's guests, you can find them on our show notes at horsesinthemorning.com. And you can follow us on the Facebook. Just search Horses in the Morning. You can also follow us on Twitter. Our handle is Horse Radio. And make sure to have all of the shows with you wherever you go. And if you haven't done it already, download the free Horse Radio Network app for your iPhone or Android. Just go to your app store and search Horse Radio Network. It is, again, free. And you could you can also listen via iTunes or your favorite pod catcher. And thanks to the NATRC and Renegade Hoof Boots and Alice Perryman for making this show possible.
Thanks for coming.
We'll see you in about another month.
Yes, ma'am.